We've got the legalese. Daryl Ryder has read through an over 200-page document as the stadium saga continues. And Daryl joins us right now, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Hello, Daryl.
Good morning, guys.
Daryl, what is? How many pages is this document?
264, including the supporting exhibits.
And you've read 264 pages of legal documents and the supporting exhibits, or just the legal documents?
It's all together. The lawsuit itself was about 20 pages. So
okay, so you've read...
They put a lot of stuff in it.
So what have you... So you read the whole thing, right?
Yep.
All right. Now, I am of the opinion that I've never believed that the city officials have ever really wanted the Cleveland Browns along the lakefront, that they've wanted to use this for... apartments, for infrastructure, for business, for a lot of different reasons, for a lot of years. This was their opportunity, but I don't believe that Justin Bibb wants to be the mayor of Cleveland forever, and I don't think that he wants somebody to run against him and use that, hey, this is the guy who let the Browns leave Cleveland. So they have to go out there and put up a fight, even though I don't believe that he wants them in downtown Cleveland. Now, that's my belief. That's my personal belief. Lima brought up, he's like, I don't know why we need to draw a side here, but that's an interesting point. How are you seeing it, Daryl? Because you have been right in the nitty-gritty with all this stuff with the stadium.
Well, I wrote this week that I think that this is all about affecting a settlement. And because the Modell Law basically says that there's two ways to comply. One, you get the city's permission. Two, the city is allowed to find new ownership for the team. Well, the Haslams are not selling the Cleveland Browns. So the only other way to comply is to get Cleveland's permission. And let's be honest about it. The only way Cleveland is going to give permission is if the Haslams find their checkbook and they write a a big check with a lot of zeros on it. And I think that that's what this is about. It's a leverage ploy by the city. You've got the Ohio Attorney General who has called for the suit that the Browns filed in federal court to be thrown out. They feel that it's a state matter and not one for the federal court to rule on. The Browns argue that. You can't force them to sign a new lease after they've already fulfilled the terms of the existing lease, then there's no more taxpayer money that's committed to the building. So that's what this, for me, Ken, comes down to, that the city of Cleveland is trying to effect a settlement to get some money, not only to tear down the existing stadium, but also to get some get some money in the pockets to begin the process of replacing that stadium with things like you were talking about, shops and apartments and condos and things like that.
Daryl, has the team seemed amenable, I should just say the Haslams, have they seemed amenable to helping, join in on the cost of tearing down the stadium, making the city whole, given all the public money that has gone their way to help with the stadium since they've had ownership?
Well, I think originally when they spoke in September, but because the city has taken the tack that they've taken, I don't know if I'm the Browns right now how amenable to anything the city requests I would be. But then again, I admit I can be spiteful. So, if you're taking me to court, I don't think I'm going to be all that.
Well, the reason I ask, I understand that, Daryl. Obviously, this has gotten spicier as we've gone on, as they often do. Look at what's happening in Chicago right now. Kind of a similar situation in many ways, where it's getting bogged down in legal battles. And yeah. I guess what I'm wondering is, in the end, like, we keep mentioning the city. But what do the Browns, what do the Haslams owe the community? What do they owe to the taxpayers? Obviously, Brook Park is still in Cuyahoga County. So that part of it doesn't change. But what do they owe this region? Is it just, hey, we're going to keep your football team in the region? Is that what they owe them? I mean, obviously, taxpayers have been on the hook for a lot of money. The Haslams have also spent a lot of money of their own money, their own money to help with renovations and stuff like that, and some of the some of the ways that stadium has looked and game day experience. So in the end, you know, the city will say we're doing this for the taxpayers. We can debate forever whether or not that's in good faith. But what about us? What about all of the Browns fans in the region and those especially living in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about what do they owe the region, what they owe the region is a product that's worthy of your time and attention. That's what they owe you. But from a legal standpoint, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and that's why I'm struggling with this whole invocation of the Modell Law, because I kind of think that the spirit of that is keeping the team in the market. And they're literally going 13 miles from downtown Cleveland or whatever it is. It's not far. It's, you know, 5 minutes from where I live. Right across the street is the airport. Right across the street is the city limits and whatnot. So, and they're asking for substantial taxpayer support for the new dome as well. But they will have fulfilled the terms of that lease. You know, one of the charges that the city of Cleveland filed against them in that lawsuit was breach of contract. And the breach of contract was not following local laws and ordinances, which is stipulated in the original lease back in 1996. And the ordinance is the Modell Law. So they sued them twice for the Modell Law, basically. Two of the counts were tied to that. And then the city wants injunctive relief. They want the court to block the move to Brick Park. They want to block any potential funding the Browns may gather for the dome. They want that blocked. They want money from the Browns in damages. Plus, they'd like money to cover their legal fees too. I don't know. After, you know, reading over through this thing, talking to people about this, I think the Modell Law is very gray. You can make it say and read the way you want it in some respects. It's not overly specific about some things. But because I asked the city point blank, you know, how can you force a team that has fulfilled a lease to sign another lease? And the response I got back, and I posted it on X, I put it in my article, was, well, we're not forcing them to sign another lease. We're forcing them to comply with the law. Well, again, it goes back to earlier in the conversation. The only way for the Browns to comply is for them to sign a new lease. They sell the team, or they get the city's permission by writing a big fat check. And again, it all leads to signing a big check. And I got to be honest with you. One of the things that I found interesting in the lawsuit, exhibits that were filed, you know, they put the original lease in there, they attached, the addendums to it and things like that. The recent correspondence between the team and the city, but they also put Cleveland's economics in there. And the city is claiming that losing the Browns is going to cost them $30 million a year in economic output. It's going to cost approximately $11 million a year in taxes, income tax, et cetera. The city's putting up $1.3 million a year in a property tax. They're also paying for insurance on that building. And if you remember in August when the mayor gave the Browns the offer he knew they were going to refuse, one of the things he asked for is, don't pay us the $250,000 rent anymore. Go ahead and pay our property tax and our insurance for us, and then we'll be good, and you can be in there, quote unquote, rent free. It feels like they're going in circles. But you know, from my standpoint, what the Browns owe the community, you fulfill the terms of the lease that you signed wherever you play, which they're doing, and then also to you put a product out there that's worthy of folks' time and attention. And I will say, for 22 of the 24 years, that's not been, or 26 years, I should say, that's not really been the case. The Browns have not put a good product out there on the field.
So, Daryl, you read the 264-page document, right?
Yeah.
Then how the hell can you tell me on Monday that you know about this quarterback class and that the Browns should trade down and not take any of these guys when you've been reading over legal documents. 264 damn pages, Daryl. And remember, you said, well, I've been watching these guys a couple of months ago. I mean, come on, Daryl. I've been sitting on that for four days. I've been sitting on that for 4 days waiting to throw that in your face.
It's called multitasking, Ken.
Oh, my ass. It's called multitasking. Are you reading over legalese? You're over there being Aaron Brockovich. I'm trying to find a quarterback for this football team because I think they're going to get this all figured out and we're moving on.
Just see Daryl going door to door.
Listen, I hope you're right, Ken. I don't think they are, but I hope you're right.
I do think this, though, in all seriousness.
I sincerely hope you're right. Fans deserve it. The players deserve it. I hope you're right.
What I want you to find, well, yeah, fans deserve it, obviously. I don't know about any of the players or anybody else, but the fans certainly deserve it. Let me tell you this. I do, Daryl. I'm telling you. You know they're going to take a quarterback. I want sometime by the end of this month, you to have a guy you like, and you to say it on this show. Now, you don't need to be in the top two. Don't need to be Shador Sanders or Cam Ward. It could be any one of the other guys, okay? I want you to find that guy.
Because my worst fear is that Andrew Berry makes an impulsive decision trying to save his job. And when you do things like that, it's how you end up in situations that you currently yourself in.
That's true.
That's my biggest concern. And just based on what I've read from the folks that live and breathe college football about this quarterback class, they're not all that impressed.
Kurt Benkert loves Cam Ward. I just don't know if we're going to be able to get Cam Ward.
But I think Cam Ward's going to go number one. I think he'll be the number one pick in the draft. I hope Deion Sanders ends up in Dallas, and the Cowboys can give the Browns all the draft picks for Shedeur Sanders and let him go to Dallas.
Would you take Dak Prescott back as part of a package? Part of a package,
The deal can't happen because of salary cap stuff.
Jack Duffin wrote, he said it can. They've got to do a lot of different things. He wrote back to me.
The Cowboys.
How the hell with the Cowboys?
It's very difficult for the Cowboys to do it because of the cap implications.
Well, then we can't make a deal. I need a quarterback right now.
I know.
I need somebody that can help me out right now before I'm going to trade down. So let me tell you this.
Hey, Ken, I've watched the team too. I'm very well aware of what the need is.
I didn't know if you just were going over things like a few good men or you were watching the Browns here. Over the last month, maybe I wouldn't have blamed you, right? Anyway, Daryl, let me throw this at you. We had Jason on at 6:40 yesterday, Lloyd. Uh-huh. He said he thinks that Kevin Stefanski, he believes Kevin Stefanski is going to be the one to lead the charge over the new quarterback or quarterbacks, plural. We have Mary Kay on at 8:20. She said that she believes Andrew Berry is going to lead that charge. I want to know, based on your media brethren, who you believe is going to lead the charge and who you want to lead the charge to find the new quarterback or quarterbacks, because you might be doing a two-for-one here in the same offseason. What do you want to do?
Well, I think it's going to be a collaborative effort. I think Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are going to work together and figure it out. I think Andrew will be not only consulting the scouting department, the personnel department side of things, but I think Kevin's going to have input. Do I think Kevin makes the final decision? Probably not, because that is Andrew's department technically. But I do feel like that Kevin's got the car keys back, and that he is going to get to run the offense that he wants to run again. And it is on Andrew Berry to find that player that actually fits the offense. And hopefully they don't take a guy that they're going to try and mold into fitting Kevin Stefanski's offense like we've seen them do.
Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Tony, got anything more for the man?
Daryl, I just said the national championship game should be tonight. Why is it Monday night?
Thoughts, opinions.
If you want the most casual fans, you want the biggest amount of eyeballs that don't have other things to do or going to bed early because they got work the next day, tonight should be the game.
I don't disagree with you. They do have to make some changes with the layout of this thing. And part of it is that they're trying to still appease the old-fashioned bowl coalition, right? They're still trying to use the bowls and stuff like that. I think that the first two rounds should be on college campuses. I don't know how you can ask college kids, colleges to fan bases to be traveling for three straight weekends to get to a national championship game. I think that's one thing that they absolutely need to change. They got to tighten it up. It just feels like that this should have already been played, not even just tonight, Anthony. I feel like the college national championship should have been last week. Should have been played last week. So, too much dead time for me in between conference championship weekend and then the college football playoff, whatever, first round or whatever you want to call the thing. They need to tighten the timeline up a little bit instead of playing it, what, January 20th will be the national title game? That's just a little late in the year for me. Well, technically early in the year, but you know what I'm saying. It's late in the year as far as the actual season goes.
Daryl, thank you for the hot times. All the best.
You bet, guys. Have a great weekend. Ken, would you like me to send those documents over to you for some nighttime reading?
I think I'm going to sit there and read through all of them documents.
Might put you to sleep.
He's the one who took the LSAT. Lima took it. I didn't take it. All right, Daryl, thank you.
Have a great weekend, guys.
You as well. Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Was last night a bad night, or was the rest of the NBA starting to figure something out? Are we frauds, as people were calling in and saying earlier and yelling at Anthony and I for being too positive about your Cleveland Cavaliers? You asked me a question about the stadium. Why are people picking sides?
Yeah, I don't really understand why it seems like I read Daryl's responses, and it's 50-50. Either they're like, why are you so in the, you know, just supporting the Haslams at every step. And then I see other people completely the opposite. So I don't understand why a fan right now has to pick a side. First of all, this is obviously
no side to take.
Going to be the city and the county and the state and the Haslams. They're going to be the decision makers on this. Remember, taxpayers, fans, we have not gotten a seat at the table.
Well,
they were doing meetings long ago that were behind the scenes that we didn't even find out about until about a year ago. So we didn't know anything about what was going on, and that's going to be the case. We are being left out of this. So it's up to all of them. How much confidence do you have that anybody has your back in all of this?
We have been, I've been very critical of the mayor. I don't believe that he's, to reiterate real quick, I don't believe that he had any idea to bring them, keep them in Cleveland. I think that they have a vision to create new space there. I've seen certain players make a big deal with this politically, where, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, guys, it's very easy to draw conclusions here. Please just look at some of the things that are starting to be built in downtown Cleveland about why there would be a problem with certain politicos. I also know that these things, there's been so many studies. I've never once claimed, and I don't believe I'll ever have the privilege to, that a new arena, stadium, et cetera, will ever be this big moneymaker for any city that they're ever in. There's been just too many studies that tells me that ain't true. So I can't tell you that Brook Park is going to have money rain in. It's going to be a rainmaker of this brand new facility. Every study that's ever been done, if it seems that if the Browns do it, it'll be the first. God bless them. Hope it happens. I just look at it and go, I want big events to come to the area. It's 5 minutes down the road for 10 minutes for me, whatever.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
10 minutes down the road for me. It's still in the county. Go ahead, put it up. I want the county to get their cut. If the city can get a cut, like you've said, fine. I just think it's going to happen. Indoor football, while it might have its non-Norman Rockwell look to it, there's going to be plenty of advantages to it. I just hope it's a loud place for when they actually play. Because, guys, they've played along the lakefront for umpteen years. They've been a bad football team for umpteen years. I'm not going to hear anything about competitive advantage. It's no competitive advantage whatsoever. The only thing that could possibly get me a competitive advantage is, yeah, roof the thing in, and it could get louder.
Yeah, much louder.
Browns fans are very loud. I've been to the stadium where it's shaken. In the moments that we've had that have been good, I've been to where the press box has been moving a little bit. And I think, boy, an indoor place, you could be the loudest place in the NFL if you really wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a reason to spend $2.5 billion, but it's still one of the things that I take from it. That's very low-level stuff. I totally understand a non-sports fan looking at it saying, plutocrats are getting what... I get what you're saying. I understand your upset feelings here, your concern. But I'm a sports guy. And I make my living from sports, and I've said it a million times, and I'll keep doing it. What's better for the three major sports teams here is still going to be better for us, and so I want them to be able to work this thing out as best they possibly can.
I think most
of it. But I want there to be some sort of a check being cut to somewhere, because I know that this is not going to make money hand over fist over a period of time.
Most of us, I think, most would agree that we would have loved a brand-new facility. We can debate about domed or retractable roof, but a new facility downtown. Unfortunately, that is going to, for the Haslam's point of view, that's going to cut into their money. Because A, they'd have to obtain the land. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of places you can do that, mm-hmm. where you'd have enough land where they would get all the development that they'd want, and give up the parking. The city or the county would have to give up the parking to the Haslam's. They want their own parking. That's why they want you to travel to their games, park in a spot, and the whole experience is money. It's cash. It's cash. It's cash. It's cash. It's cash.
And the thing
obviously, that's what the Haslam's want, and the Haslam's are trying to bargain with you, saying, we're giving you a state-of-the-art facility that's going to be the best in the NFL.
Well, and I also saw some of the numbers, the figures thrown out for season tickets and things of that nature, and they were very high numbers. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. However, I saw the same thing with Buffalo, and a lot of people balking at the price of Buffalo. Again, very high numbers. But there's claimed to be a waiting list. And I still say, well, you're going to have one price. There's always going to be such a thing as a secondary market now. If the Browns are a 3-win football team, you'll be able to get into the new stadium for $6 at some point. Like it's that simple. So my thought is, you're going to get something built, whether you like it or not. If you're going to go over to the stadium, you might as well be comfortable. You might as well be able to take your coat off. Might as well be able to host other events. I think that there are certain entities in the city that don't like that, because if you do it the right way, like they do with Lucas Oil Stadium over there in Indianapolis, they're not just using the football field 365 days. There's other events that go on. Madison Square Garden is not just a basketball court. Now, that place has been around for a long time, but there's so many different things that go on in the corners of the building and things like that that we don't really talk about, because we don't know Indianapolis, Indiana that very well, you and I. But they do things, it seems, every single year, every single day of every single year, that there is something going on there. And that would cut into convention center, the field house, and some of the other stuff there. And that might be a problem for some folks. 216-474-0092. But I'm not gonna. Every study that's been sent to me, every study that I've seen, I'm not going to insult anybody and say that, oh, this is going to make money for the region. I don't know if that's true. over the long course of time. I don't know. I don't believe that to be true. And if they do it, I'm guessing here from everything I've read, they'd be the first. Hopefully it's the case. Lima, do you think I should back down from my Notre Dame, Ohio State guarantee?
You know me, when it comes to a championship game, don't love guarantees. I did tell you that obviously if this were a trestle game, certainly if it was an Urban Meyer game, given the talent advantage that Ohio State has, I'd be picking Ohio State and probably by a landslide because I've seen Ryan Day struggle in some big games. That's been great through this playoff run. It's been a much different story. But because I've seen it, and really it's the Michigan game this year, that is making me nervous because obviously Notre Dame wants to play like Michigan. They got a way better quarterback than what Michigan had. But the guarantee from you was interesting. I did not expect it. I wondered if you were doing a reverse jinx because you secretly want Notre Dame to win.
I do not secretly want Notre Dame to win. I will be watching from high atop, almost like Sting. I am a neutral observer. I hate Ohio State.
I do not.
That is a doctored piece of audio. I do not hate Ohio State. And I certainly don't hate Notre Dame. I will be a neutral observer, and I will tell you exactly why I will not back down. Like Tom Petty, I will not back down. This is unbelievable. Danny's joining us in the studio right now.
Hi. How are
you? Danny Cunningham, Cleveland Magazine, 92.3 The Fan. He's joining us right now in the Smart Choice Windows and More Studios. The Cavs got ass last night.
They got crushed.
And Lyman and I were like, hey, no big deal. And we took a slew of calls earlier today going, you guys are full of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I would not have expected. I would have thought that a team that won 34 of its first 40 games would have earned a little bit more.
No, there was plenty of people saying that we are putting our heads in the sand. And we do not. Lima, if I'm lying, I'm flying, brother.
No, I believe that you're saying. I can't believe that's the take.
Yeah,
that is stunning to me from a team that has been so good in so many different facets that really hasn't shown very many weaknesses. Yeah, they had a bad night last night. It was a real bad time to have a bad time, but that's what happened. I wouldn't read that much into it. Like, if you want to find things to be concerned about that go beyond last night, I do think you can, but I don't think that it's time to sound the alarms. Like, they're still one of the best three teams in basketball, clearly.
I pointed out that, I mean, Boston is like 7-7 in their last 14.
They're bored. Boston is bored.
So they're bored. I certainly don't think the Cavs are bored. I think they've been playing their butts off. And last night was weird because I thought they would control that game because of the advantage without the big man. I wanted to see these two teams match up healthy. The Cavs were healthy. Unfortunately, Oklahoma City wasn't, but I wondered, do you think that seeped into the minds of the Cavs? Like, oh, we're going to have fun. We're going to show the league who we are. It's on national television again. We had that huge edge inside last time. It'll just manifest itself this time.
So what last night kind of felt like to me, and I'm very curious how you feel about this, but when the postseason arrives, and like in the 4-5 matchup, if the 4 seed, and we saw this last year, if the 4 seed wins the first 2 games at home and it goes back to the other city for game 3, that team that's down 0-2, if they're anything worth their salt, they win every time. They come out like a desperate team, and you can't fake that desperation. That's what OKC looked like to me last night. They looked like a desperate team, and since they lost to the Cavs, they've looked like that.
Desperate.
I'm not saying they were, but they were able to manufacture that desperation in a way that the Cavs couldn't last night. And on January 16th, I don't think that's that big of a deal. Like, the Cavs, I think there are some things to be concerned about defensively that they've not played up to their standard on that end of the floor, but they also looked like a team that just had a bad night. They look like a team, honestly, that since they beat OKC a week and a couple days ago, is going through a little bit of a rough patch. And that happens over the course of an 82-game season. It's not that big of a deal. It's one loss. Yeah, they got their butts kicked in a way I didn't think we would see them get their butts kicked this year. But this isn't some referendum on what the rest of the season is going to look like.
Yeah, now you mentioned, you know, there are going to be times during the season where everybody, you know, has struggles. Even when LeBron was here, he would have he would have those bored 3-week stretches.
Right.
Or, my God, sometimes he would just leave the country for a month and we wouldn't know what the hell happened. So in this case, Donovan Mitchell, I went back and looked. It's only been 6 games, but it's been the worst month of basketball he has had this January, dating back to his second year early on in the league. He's averaging 38% from the field. He's averaging 18 points a game. He's not really a distributor either. What do you think's going on with Donovan? Because they've managed his minutes. It's not like he's going to be burnt out like he was the last few years.
Well, I think part of it is Lu Dort, too. Like, in that six-game sample size, the guy that is...
Lyman brought him up earlier.
Well, I mean, Lu Dort is basically, at this point, I think, built in a lab to defend Donovan Mitchell. If you go look at his numbers career-wise... With Lu Dort guarding him, he's like 25 of 87 in his career. It is bad stuff. And the fact that he has faced him twice in those six games, I think very much contributes to those numbers being like that. Because, you know, you watch him on Tuesday night in Indiana, especially in that first half, he looked awesome. And then he didn't do as much in the second half. If you want to say maybe he didn't play as well or just didn't need to do as much because Evan Mobley was awesome in that third quarter, Darius Garland was awesome in that fourth quarter, I think you can kind of shape that argument whichever way you feel like making the point. But I do think that a big chunk of him having a rough month of January so far is he's played the Thunder twice, and the Thunder are one of the worst teams in the NBA that he's played against. That's been one of the worst matchups for him throughout his career, I should say. Like, if you want to go by shooting percentages, they're the third worst, I think, like in true shooting percentage for his career against a specific team. OKC just gives him nightmares.
Now, what about Boston?
In terms of the matchup for Donovan Mitchell or what they're going through right now? I mean,
We'll get to what they're going through right now, but matchups first for the Cavs.
I think Drew Holiday is a really good defender, but I just don't think he is quite as strong as Lu Dort is when you talk about the matchup on Donovan Mitchell in specific. And, you know, in the game the Cavs lost in Boston, where they were without, I think, four rotation players, didn't play in that game when they went into Boston 15-0 and lost their first game of the year, Donovan played really, really well. That's not something that I find overly concerning. I think that the strength is something Boston doesn't, and I'm just talking physical strength that OKC has with guys that can defend Donovan Mitchell. Boston has length, and Drew Holiday is a really good defender, and Derek White's a really good defender. I think those guys are more suited to give Darius Garland problems than they are to give Donovan Mitchell problems. Because even the, you know, you think to the game the Cavs won against Boston. They won that game because Donovan Mitchell had, what, 20 points in the fourth quarter? That matchup for him specifically, I don't think is nearly as concerning as OKC.
Okay, so what's going on with Boston right now? Because like Jason Tatum was saying, we're going through some bleep right now earlier this week. What is going on with the Celtics?
I think part of it's their board. I think part of it is they're in a rough patch the same way the Cavs are in a rough patch right now. They're not shooting the basketball very well.
We're not bored, are we?
No, we're not bored. Okay. I think the Cavs are just going through a rough patch. And that happens over the course of an 82-game season. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something to be alarmed about. Again, if you want to find underlying concerns, you can, but I don't think that the season's over because they got their butts kicked last night. Well, I think Boston is not shooting the ball well. I think they're bored because this is a group that not only won a championship last year, but the core of this team has played really deep into the postseason for 6 or 7 years straight now, and them not taking things maybe as seriously as their fans would like in the month of January, I just don't find to be all that big of a deal. And I also think part of it, too, the Cavs' lead over Boston is, what, 6.5 games right now for the first seed? Mm-hmm. I do think the Celtics are a little resigned to, we're going to be in the second seed. We're going to be in a 2-3 matchup against New York. What's the point right now? Because the Cavs have played so well, they're going to win 63, 64 games. I don't think Boston's going to get to that height. I think they're a little resigned that they're not going to be the one seed, so maybe they're not putting forth their best effort in January.
I also want to know, and we were accused of making excuses earlier. Like, again, the calls were not exactly what I thought they were going to be. I thought there would be a little bit more positivity. But you know what? It's sports talk radio. These things happen. Danny Cunningham, by the way, joining us in studio, the Smart Choice Windows and More Studios. Find his Substack, The Inside Shot at Substack. Danny, going back to last night, and I was accused of making excuses because I go, you know, they got to try different things, and this is the time to try different things because, like, Donovan's minutes are down. Mm-hmm. Trying to do that on purpose. Darius, you have to see what he can do as far as leading you in big stages. And I also have to prepare for something that I don't want to coach to injury, but I have to be prepared for it because Orlando's gone through it. Oklahoma City got a big win last night, obviously, but they're going through it right now. I mean, they're talking about making trades for centers because Hartenstein's calf. I got to be ready to do something if Donovan, God forbid, has a pulled groin. If Darius gets slapped in the face or raked across the eyes or something like that, like something has to happen. So you're going to have to try to do some different things.
Right. And I do think that they've done a good job. And we've seen Donovan Mitchell. I don't want to say take a step back, but take a step to the side almost to allow Darius Garland and Evan Mobley elevate the way that they have. And I think both of those guys should be all-stars. And I think that's kind of been the thing they've done to prepare for that. Now, they, for the most part, like, this is going to sound ironic because last night was the first night they had their entire roster available all season, but they've avoided significant injuries. Like, the things they've had have been minor, with the exception of Max Strus's ankle injury that kept him out for the first 2 months. But other than that, it's been minor stuff that they've been able to work through. And I think that if something happens to Donovan, you should have a ton of faith that Darius Garland can elevate his game even further because of how good he's been this year. I think if something happens to Jared Allen, well, the Cavs have kind of actually been at their best when Evan Mobley has been at the five throughout the season. You would think there wouldn't be too big of a drop off there. They've got tremendous depth, which is a big reason why you mentioned minutes being down for Donovan Mitchell. They can do that because they've got 11 guys that belong in an NBA rotation. And I think that's a big part of how they would handle any injury too.
You know, there's been so much talk, even from the commissioner, about how different the league is right now, how deep it is. We've had six different champions in 6 years. But one formula has remained intact for almost my entire lifetime, which is you got to have one of the best five players in the league to really win a championship. We've had a few anomalies. I told Justin Termini last night that you got to go back to Chauncey Billups in, 2004?
Talking to him last night?
Yeah, yeah. He had me on.
Oh, you were on a show?
Yeah. It was nice of them.
Well, you're just doing everything. You're going out for drinks with Owen without me. Now you're going.
It's old Lima
back.
So, oh, yeah. They go out for drinks.
Trouble
now.
In Paradise here?
Oh, yeah. There's something's getting plotted. So don't think I'm not
done. I can't wait to find out what
something's
it is.
Plotting a coup.
Something's going on.
So, Danny, I said, and this, I couldn't find a better way to phrase it. Help me phrase it better. But I was going to ask the question, like, would Donovan Mitchell be the worst, best player on a championship team since 2004? Maybe, people would say, well, Jason Tatum last year. Boston fans have thought Jason Tatum's a top five player.
Right.
In the
league. He's certainly closer to five than he is to one.
Yeah. Donovan's never been a top five player in the league.
No,
is he in the 10 to 15 range?
I think you can make the case that he's top 10. And when he's been healthy in Cleveland, I do think he's been a top 10 player. Like the first year he was here, he finished, sixth in MVP voting. Last year, he was going to be an all NBA player again, first or second team. Before the injuries knocked him out of being eligible for that. So I do think that he is inside that top 10. I don't think there's a world where he's inside that top five. But I also think that over the last couple of years, and Boston, I think, is sort of the last of the super teams, because with the way that the league is structured financially, it's just going to be really hard to make the trades that they've been able to make. Like, I don't think now they'd be able to make a trade for Jrue Holiday the way they could a couple years ago.
Chance.
I don't know they could make a trade for Kristaps Porzingis the way they could a few years ago. So I do think that teams are going to be more depth-oriented. And at a certain point, it will get back to needing to have a top five player. But I think we're going to go through a stretch where you might not need that, where you might not need to have a top five player. It's going to matter about being able to elevate the team to make it more than just the sum of its parts. And I do think the Cavs are that right now. I will also say, 2 years from now, we might be talking about Evan Mobley as a top five player in basketball. That could be the recipe.
I did not think that was possible a year ago. I think it's on the table now. Yeah.
Right. With how good he's been, I think that is something that is, it's far from a guarantee, but you can't rule it out at this point either.
Should he be shooting threes?
Yeah, absolutely. He's shooting 40% on threes.
Okay, I would hope so.
He's been awesome since December. He's taken like 4 or 5 a game and shooting 40%. Like, no one wants to turn him. No one should want to turn him into Brook Lopez, where he's taking 9 a game. Yeah. But 4 or 5, I think that's a very good spot to be.
I'm sorry, I'm taking everything personally. These are people who called in earlier.
I get it.
I'm sorry about that.
Do people not want him taking threes?
But somebody was very adamant to stop doing it.
That's ridiculous. Like, he's been awesome.
Yeah, I know we got to go. Something to think about, and maybe next time you come on, have your answer. Who is having a better coaching season, Kenny Atkinson or J.B. Bickerstaff?
Kenny Atkinson. Because J.B.
He answered it now.
Yeah, he answered it.
He was supposed to think about it.
That Detroit team looks a lot like the Cavs the year before Donovan Mitchell arrived. Like, we've seen J.B. do this before. We've not seen Kenny do this before. I expected Detroit to kind of look how they look. They've had a really good month.
We could play him in the first round. Could we not?
I think the storylines there would be outstanding.
That'd be awesome.
I'm very excited for the two matchups with Detroit that they have coming up in a couple of weeks. I think it's going to be awesome.
Especially after what George kind of said about JB yesterday. Where it's nice to have a coach that isn't, he didn't say the nice thing, but it's like, yeah, as long as you're not yelling at the refs, a little bit more calm, not taking as many fouls, and then all of a sudden there was a technical on Kenny Atkinson later in the evening.
Yeah, he's gotten pretty upset with officials in the last couple of weeks in a way that he wasn't earlier in the season.